The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement IRA Show podcast. This is the Retirement IRA Show live edition. So we are broadcasting live right now on the internet. Those of you listening to this recorded off of iTunes or some other podcast service, if you want to listen to us live so that you can call in, you can do so by visiting our website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Every Monday afternoon, typically. I hate to use the word every, because occasionally there's an exception.
But like next Monday?
Like next Monday. So pretty much every Monday afternoon, we go live, generally about 3:30 Mountain Time. We're a little late today. We've been a little bit inconsistent. Maybe we can get back on track. Jim and I have other things going on, so occasionally things get a little out of whack. Sometimes we go a little early, sometimes
we Well, we are an actual live financial planning practice, and sometimes I get tied up. You are an instructor at Colorado State University where you teach financial planning. Sometimes you get tied up. So life gets in the way, and we sometimes can't be here right at 3:30, but we try every Monday to be here at 3:30. And I do know next Monday, Chris is on spring break already.
Well, it's spring, almost.
I thought
it's
spring
March.
Break was towards the end of March.
Depends on the district, the schools. They kind of spread it out. Not everybody in the whole country has it at the same time.
So CSU is next week.
It is, as well as the local school district here.
Oh, so they time it.
But I think they intentionally have CU on a different week, so the whole state of Colorado.
CU is still in a couple more weeks.
I think that's true, and Denver school districts are going to vary as well. So it depends on the school district and the university.
Okay. So next Monday, Chris isn't going to be here. He's gone for spring break. Where are you guys going?
Out of town. I don't want to be stalked.
You think people are going to show up where you are?
You never know.
All right.
I'll tell you after I get back.
Someplace warm?
It's warm, yeah.
Warm? Okay. Mm-hmm. And is there water there?
Yeah.
Is the highest point 300 feet?
I don't know. Possibly.
Are oranges their main fruit export?
Now you're getting a little personal.
Just trying to...
Maybe not.
Maybe not. Just trying to guess where you might be going. Is there a big mouse?
Oh my goodness. Why are you keep asking me these questions?
That wears red suspenders.
I don't know.
All right.
Seems creepy. A mouse with suspenders.
But anyways, Chris won't be here, so we are either going to record on Friday, not live, and that way you will have still original content, So you can down hear this podcast, which will be playing or available on iTunes probably on or around Saturday the 10th. And the following Saturday, the 17th, still have a new podcast to listen to because we will record it before Chris leaves to some mysterious location for spring break. Or we're going to take the Colorado show that we just recorded before coming on and recording our podcast today and make that a standalone. A lot's going to depend on how much I can get done on Friday on whether or not we can record or not. So we will not be live, though, for our iTunians and Androidians listening to this on whatever podcast program you prefer. If you intend to call in next Monday, which would be what? Next Monday is what? Do we know? That's 13th, I believe.
Next Monday would be the 12th. Yeah.
Close.
So no live show the 12th.
On the 12th. No live show on the 12th, but there will be a new original show on the 17th. We will have that for you. Okay. Now, I know we have a caller. Is he or she on the line?
No, not quite yet. We're going to reach out to them so we can answer maybe. We had a short question, I think. I'll let Laura know.
Yeah. We did have a caller who called earlier, but of course we were not ready. And he was in I think it was on a cell phone in a car anyways. But he is going to try calling us back. So we're going to reach out to him. And if you call us, go to our website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Our phone number is right there. If you call us and let us know, especially if we're not broadcasting yet and you're waiting for us to come live, Laura will tell you when she thinks we're going to be able to start broadcasting. Or if you want to call us earlier, as this gentleman did and said, hey, you know, I really want to talk to you guys today. I got a question. And Laura just simply said, great. As soon as the guys start recording, meaning Laura, will reach out to you and get you on with them. So it's no problem. You can call the office. The phone number is on our website, jimhelps.com, and Laura will make all arrangements to reach out to you when it's time to record.
So that first caller is going to be coming in here in just a moment. So we'll just
don't stop
tread some water. Yeah, I think Laura got a hold of him very quickly. So here we go. Good afternoon, George. Which is what we call everyone who calls into the show and wants to stay anonymous. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Perfect. We can hear you nice and clear. So thanks for hanging with us as we were a little delayed today. So Laura has prompted me with your question, but maybe you can, for the benefit of our audience, you can restate the question for us, and I will do my best to answer it.
Yeah, it's actually a few questions, and it's with respect to an out-of-the-ordinary Social Security situation.
Okay.
So my situation is I retired from my job in 2015, and I'm going to be 62 this month. I'm married, and I have two children who are ages 10 and 13. Okay. I've applied for Social Security online in December, and I received an award letter in January. And then last month, I applied for benefits for my two children, and I'm waiting to hear how that goes through. It was late in the month, so I haven't heard yet, but I expect that to go through okay.
Yeah.
So the obviously, with children at this age, I've done some calculations to determine if it makes sense to start my Social Security benefits at age 62. And based on the numbers, it looks like my break-even point versus taking it at 70 is age 88. So I'm looking at taking the Social Security now.
Jim, let me hold you there for just a second.
Go ahead.
Jim was kind of shaking his head, but I understand. I'm with you on your page. Jim, what he's saying is the extra child benefits that he's going to receive as a household while he's under his full retirement age are going to make the total receipts of Social Security benefits higher than you'd normally get by claiming 62.
I see.
So it actually, if he compares to waiting till 70, when now the kids are going to be too old to collect any child benefits. His own benefit will be larger, but he will have
take to age 88
yeah,
to break.
Foregone all those. So that pushed the break-even point out
a lot further
beyond
out.
What we usually see, which is in the early 80s is usually where we see it. So I just wanted to make sure Jim was on board.
Yeah, that was clarification for me. He probably looked over and saw my face going, huh?
Yeah. Okay. So sorry for the interruption, but I wanted to make sure. Because if Jim was shaking his head,
listeners are
probably wondering what you were talking about as well.
No, good. I'm glad we cleared that up. Yep. So my questions relate more so to the fact that I have this deferred compensation from my job. Mm-hmm. And it's in the form of non-qualified stock options, which were granted to me in the years 2011, 12, and 13. And when I exercise those options, and I've done so in the last 2 years, I still get a W-2. Mm-hmm. They still take out all the federal and state taxes, including FICA. But my understanding is these earnings do not count as wages in the current year, where I would hit the earnings test against my Social Security benefits. And I wanted to get your understanding of what that situation is, and am I in for trouble, or am I going down an okay road here?
I think you're going to be fine. What you're describing falls under a category that Social Security calls special payments after retirement. And I'm going to direct you to an actual, it's a really short two-page brochure that Social Security publishes as a PDF online. I'll give you the publication number to make it really easy to find so that you can have this in your hands if you find yourself in front of a Social Security agent who doesn't know what you're talking about and you're trying to avoid the earnings test because of these W-2 earnings that you're going to see now moving forward as you collect that deferred compensation. The publication number is 05-10063. And that's entitled Special Payments After Retirement, and with a subheading, Bonuses, Vacation Pay, Commissions, Sick Pay, Insurance Commissions, Carryover Crops, and Other Special Payments. So, in general, they define a special payment as a payment that represents earnings that you had prior to retirement that you are collecting in a later year, which is exactly what you're talking about. You earned those stock options in 2011, 2012, and 2013 for work you did back then. You are, my understanding from your description, no longer working there earning these. You have already earned them. You just haven't exercised them yet. And it's true that you didn't pay any taxes when you were granted these things. It happens when you exercise them and receive and recognize the income, and they put it on your W-2. And you're worried that that's going to be counted as earnings, and because you're below your full retirement age, you'll be subject to the earnings test, which is going to undermine your whole plan to collect these benefits now, including the child benefits for your two children, correct?
Correct.
Does that summarize it all? So the good news is, as long as you truly earned these things prior to retirement, and they're just being paid to you today, they should be counted, or they should avoid being counted in your earnings test calculation, even though you are getting a W-2. And especially it'll be easier to make this argument if you have to. I doubt you will, because this is actually more common than you might think. On the W-2, do you recall if it is in a box labeled non-qualified plan, or does it show up as just regular W-2 earnings?
It shows up as regular W-2 earnings, but in box 12, they categorize it as letter V, which is non-qualified stock options.
Perfect.
And the total amount is the same as the earnings amount in box 1, et cetera.
Perfect. So that bolsters your case so that there's no confusion. Your employer is doing exactly right in recording that. And based on this publication, it says, and I'm quoting, if you get Social Security and your total yearly earnings exceed the limit and these earnings include a special payment, contact Social Security. Tell us if you think you received a special payment. If we agree, we will not count the special payment as part of your total earnings for the year. So well, there
that's
is
good
this,
news.
So there is this little crack or chink in the armor that I guess they could disagree with you, but I can't imagine how they would, because clearly in this document they're describing special payments as earnings prior to retirement that you're now receiving later on. And they give some examples like insurance commissions. They said two specific occupational groups that commonly receive earnings, which qualify as special payments, are insurance salespeople who receive renewal or repeat commissions, and farmers who receive income from carryover crops. Where they've farmed, they've harvested the crops and they're in storage, but they ultimately get sold later. So those are two prime examples of what is actually very similar to what you are experiencing. You've earned them previously. You just happen to be receiving and having them recognized for tax purposes in the current year. Those are considered special payments and do not contribute to the earnings that's considered for the earnings test.
That's good news. And I was just a little concerned that somebody at the Social Security office, again, might not be thinking along those lines or experienced with these types of situations. So I could run into an issue down the road.
And that's why I'd probably keep your hands on this publication. I can give you the number again if you need it. But I'd have that because it really addresses your issue directly. And it does happen quite a lot. That doesn't mean that the person you're dealing with face-to-face on the, any given day where you might run into them in the office there might see things differently. But if it gets escalated to a more experienced person or what we call a technical expert in the Social Security office there, they will totally know what a special payment is and should, by your description, this should qualify as a special payment and avoid the earnings test issue you're talking about.
Okay, good. And then I just had a follow-up on this.
Sure.
Which is, will they increase my benefit going forward based on these earnings or these special payments and paying the FICA tax on them, as I do have some years in my history which can be easily replaced by some of these higher stock options exercises?
Okay. Yes. Anytime you're contributing FICA taxes, they're going to consider those what are called Social Security earnings. And every year, even after you've claimed Social Security, even after age 62, which is when they calculate your primary insurance amount, which all of these benefits are based upon that particular amount, which I'm not going to go into the full convoluted calculation of that, but on your 62nd birthday, essentially, they determine that PIA number. After that, your earnings or your benefit can only increase. It cannot decrease because of additional earnings that you have or part-time work or what have you. But for some people, they're going to have earnings substantial enough in their 60s, after age 62, that those earnings are high enough to replace either a lower earnings year or even a zero year previous in their earnings history. And if that's true, every year they get these earnings reports from the IRS, they're going to recalculate. And if your PIA increases because of that, you'll get that increase. But for most people, it doesn't. But if these exercised options are large enough, you may very well find that your Social Security benefit increases slightly because maybe a zero year or a low year is replaced by this new earnings record entry.
Okay, and that would affect my children's payments too.
It would, because it affects the number that all those benefits are calculated from, which is your PIA number. So do you have some zeros in your do you not have 35 years of earnings entries in your record?
No, I have 40 odd years, but some of them are pretty low.
Yeah. Those usually are early on and when you adjust them for inflation, they're not quite as low as they might appear. But if it is the case that of the 35 they're considering now, you know, you said you have 40 some. They don't consider all of them. They only consider the 40 or the 35 best of them. Of those 35, if you generate an earnings entry into your record in your 60s that replaces one of those because it's higher, that does generate a recalculation of your PIA and your benefits get adjusted. And that should happen automatically. That's not something you have to call and ask for. The only thing, if you've done your own homework and you see it and you truly believe there should have been an adjustment and there isn't, that's when you might have to reach out because it fell through the cracks, or maybe your version of the calculation versus theirs isn't consistent, and one of you is wrong at that point. But this should happen automatically.
Okay, great. That answers that question. And you just made me think of another question, actually, a parallel question.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm here in what Chris calls the retirement hole or the retirement planning window, I think you call it.
Yep.
If I was to take an IRA distribution, because I'm in this window and maybe in a lower tax bracket,
mm-hmm.
will I pay, are FICA taxes taken out of those also?
No. When you earned those monies originally, FICA taxes were taken out at that time. The only thing that was deferred, if these were deductible IRA contributions, the only thing that was deferred were the income taxes, not the payroll taxes. Those were paid when it went in.
Okay.
So distributions from retirement accounts will not affect your PIA because they don't create another Social Security earnings entry into your record.
Okay, thank you. That just sort of came to mind when we were talking about
good question,
FICA tax on the
Because you never know. This stuff is so convoluted at times. Sometimes something like that is true when you wouldn't expect it. So, does that cover the questions you have so far?
Yeah, I think that's it. Oh, you know, I had one more written down here. This
okay.
is just a little side issue.
Sure.
I'm filing for my children. I'm not required to file for my wife as a mother of younger children, am I?
No. You're not required to.
Okay.
Does she have a job?
Yes, and that's why I don't want
to.
Right,
and there's no requirement. They do, however, force you to file for all children for whom that fall under your record. And the only reason I mention that is, and this is a real tangent, so I'm not going to go very far down this road, there can be times in certain circumstances where you may or may not want income attributable to a specific child for reasons beyond the scope of this conversation. So it would be nice if they allowed you to pick and choose and say, no, I want benefits for child A, but not child B. And I don't want to have to explain myself to the Social Security Administration. They do not allow you to do that. All children that are underneath your record are going to get their piece. They're going to split up among the children the benefit. They don't each get their own full benefit. There's going to be what's called a family maximum that you can receive. And that's essentially going to limit your total receipts to about 1.5 times what you would receive as an individual. Sometimes it can be a little more than that, but from my experience looking at the calculations, almost everyone gets capped at that 50% level. So that extra 50% bonus, if you want to consider it a bonus, that you're receiving for these children, they won't each receive 50% of your benefits. They're going to receive between the two of them a total of 50. As the nice thing is, the older one ages out and their benefits shut off, then the entire 50% gets attributed to the remaining child until they age out. So you'll essentially receive the same amount of child benefits until the last child ages out at 16.
Can I ask a question?
Okay, that's what,
sure.
That's a
how does Social,
oh, go ahead.
How does Social Security know how many kids he has? Do they get that from his tax return?
I bet they do. Usually people tell them. I guess it's possible that you could intentionally go in and not reveal one of the children, and they may not catch it. But if they know about it, which they have a funny way of finding out things, because tax records are shared with the Social Security Administration, and you've claimed them as a dependent, there'll probably be a question crop up at some point in the future. So the nice thing as far as the doll, it would be rare that you'd want to pick and choose among the children, but I could see where one maybe had a job and there were some issues with income levels, so they didn't have to file an income tax return or some strange reasons why you might want to do it. But if they know about it, they force you to take it. It doesn't affect the dollar amount, whether you split it up between just a single child or multiple children. And as they each age out, they just attribute more and more to the remaining until you're down to the last one, and they get the whole thing until that last one ages out, and then it shuts off.
Okay. So. All righty.
Yeah, for me, that didn't apply.
Okay, good. Well, how have we done today, George? Have we clarified some things for you?
I think you guys have done very well. You've really explained pretty much the whole situation to me. I feel a lot more comfortable with it now, and I'm ready to move ahead.
Perfect. Just out of curiosity, because we do still have a few states on our map for which we don't have a star from a caller, would you mind?
Sorry.
Sounds East Coast.
I suspected that. But although, aren't we still missing?
I think we have Delaware.
Oh, no, we got Delaware, finally. Yep. Never mind. So that's okay.
I'm here in New Jersey. So.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't think it. You didn't sound like you had an Idaho accent.
He could have relocated to the fine state of Idaho.
True, because we've got Mr. Boston here, sitting here across from me here in Colorado.
That's
so you never know when someone... If you ever find yourself traveling out west here in Idaho, give us a call with another question.
That doesn't
send an
count.
Email.
We need a resident from the state.
Okay. I'm starting to get desperate.
No travelers. So.
Okay. Idaho, Nebraska, and don't you need one more? Mississippi.
Nevada.
Oh, you still need four more.
Yep, four more. We're down to the last four. We've got the others.
The final four.
Well, that's appropriate.
We should have a bracket.
We should. Well, thanks for the call. Have a nice afternoon
guys.
There in New Jersey.
Thank you very much.
If anything else comes up, let us know.
I will. Thanks a lot.
Great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You know what we're going to do? I just thought of this.
What are we going to do?
We'll get Junior and Pete in here.
Yeah.
And the four of us are going to put $5 down in a pot that sits on the table, and we're each going to pick a state. Last one standing gets the $20.
With no time limit?
No, until we fill the thing, because there's four of us, there's four states left.
Pete might not make it.
What do you mean Pete might not make it? You think he's going to die
before? He has a disadvantage built in because he's the oldest of the four of us. Well, and Junior has the greatest advantage.
You think it's going to take Pete's remaining life expectancy? The man's only 64.
It's taken a long time to get these last four. I'm not sure internet works in Idaho, Nevada, Nebraska, or Mississippi.
Well, maybe Justin, who's 34, will win merely because he outlived the only three of us. I don't think it's going to be that long, but I was just thinking, the final four, we have to come up with something on that.
Okay.
And what better way? And that way, listeners could really screw us over. Let's just say you have Nevada.
They could pick winners.
They could pick winners for sure because
somebody could hold off. Yeah.
Yep. Or someone from, say, let's say I choose Nebraska, I get assigned Nebraska. Someone in Nebraska could really stick it to me by calling with a question or emailing
right
with
away.
A question. Yeah.
Yep.
Just see it, Jim. You're done.
We're just up to the listener's mercy.
Yes, we are. We will be.
So that wasn't a common question. I loved that question because it was had all kinds of unique elements.
It was
kind of boring to answer exactly the same kinds of questions all the time. So,
and it was nice having a
live person,
live interaction. So, any of our iTunians or Androidians out there who are listening, if you yourself have questions, you can send us emails. I have a stack of emails here. We're going to try to get through a couple of them before we stop recording for the day. But you're more than welcome to email us. You can go to our website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Click on the Contact Us button, and you can submit your question right through our website. Or you can simply send us an email to jim@jimhelps.com, and we'll answer your email on the radio, as we're going to do several today. But if you want to jump to the top of the line, then you simply have to call the show every Monday afternoon, 3:30 Eastern Time. Not Eastern Time, 3:30 Mountain Time. Mm-hmm. See, we got the subject of the East Coast here. 3:30 Mountain Time or thereabouts. We could be a little earlier or could be a little later. And we will answer your question as we did for this particular George right off the bat. And so everyone knows how this particular George did it. He called us earlier in the day to find out from Laura what time we would be recording and to leave his number. And Laura said, when the guys start recording, I, meaning her, will reach out and get a hold of you and put you on the show. So that's always an option to do as well.
It was kind of nice. Some people might think that I have all these Social Security publications at my fingertips. The one thing I knew of the existence of this document, and I knew the answer to it, but I wanted to provide him the documentation in case he needed
it. Well, and it helps with me, too. Granted, we know a lot, but we don't know it all. And sooner or later, someone is going to call or email us, and we're not going to know the answer.
Right.
Now, in an email, it's no big deal. We'll go research it. Like, there's a few times where we run into people like that, and I'll reach out to the Ed Slot group ahead of time, get my ducks in a row, make sure everything is set. But on a live call, it would be beneficial if we knew sometimes ahead of time in case we did have to do any research. If not, we'll simply tell you on a live call, hey, we're going to answer that for you next week. We have to do some research on this. But we won't hesitate to tell people if we have to research. We don't know everything. We're not like that IBM computer Watson. We don't know it all. But we know a lot, and it does take a bit to stump us.
We should invite Watson to the show sometime.
Oh, God, then. Watson would just cream us.
Well, it'd make our job a lot easier. Just sit here and let him take the calls.
True. Well, according to his new commercial, he knows when an elevator is going to break down before it even breaks down.
We actually have another caller. This is going to be a record-breaking show.
Wow, we may not get to emails.
We may, which is totally fine. By the way, there's another way to get to the front of the line. That is to be contacting us from Nevada, Idaho, Nebraska, or Mississippi. So, yeah, we've got a George coming in here and momentarily from Missouri, a little closer than New Jersey.
It might be Missouri to this George.
Could be Missouri. So we'll find out. Good afternoon, George. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you. How about you?
Excellent. We can hear you just fine, but we have to start with a clarifying question here. Are you a Missouri or a Missouri?
Missourian.
Missourian. Which do you prefer?
Missourian. Missouri would be someone from the southern part of the state, I believe.
From the southern part of the state?
Can you hear? I hate to interrupt, I have a hard time understanding what he's saying.
Let me adjust it a little bit. He's got a preponderance of bass for some reason.
Yes, a lot of bass.
Let me see if
How about that? Is that better?
Oh, my gosh. That's tons better.
Thank you. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Yeah, you sounded like a baritone.
Under a pillow.
I was trying to put on my radio voice, I guess.
Oh, trying to disguise your voice. Okay.
Well, we'll keep calling you George, although I know there's other Georges.
Now, you know Pete, who's not here today, he is a Missourian as well, but I think he's from the Missouri, isn't he?
He's a Missouri.
Yeah, he was a Missouri.
Yeah.
So anyway, on to the more important things. Laura mentions you have a follow-up Social Security question. Is that true?
Yeah, so I've called the radio show before and had a question and talked to you all. So my situation is I have a disabled son.
Okay.
And so he will be receiving child benefits as a disabled as when we get to our retirement.
Right.
And my wife is actually older than myself, but I am the primary, I basically am the primary breadwinner.
Okay.
So she is 8 years older than me, and she is 62 now, so we've gotten a little closer to the age of retirement.
Okay.
So I'm wondering, working out her and getting my son, if my understanding from looking at the tables is they would both get about she would get about $750 and he would get $500 a month on her work schedule before we married and she stayed home.
Okay.
But then mine is considerably their child benefit and spouse benefits are quite a bit higher when I retire.
Right.
So trying to decide whether knowing that, and theirs won't go up if I delay retirement credits even longer, how does the software you guys use for figuring this out, is this like too complicated for that to figure all that out and decide what's
the optimal
filing? To
be honest with you, I haven't tried a case entry where there was a disabled child. We have had child benefits factored in before. I would suspect, knowing the back-end engine that they use and how detailed it is, that it likely will allow us to crunch the numbers on your scenario. But I can't swear to it until I get in there and see if it asks the right questions.
I'd be surprised if it didn't.
Yeah,
but
it's pretty detailed, and they take great pains to be the most detailed and accurate engine of its sort in this profession. There are others that are pretty close, but I haven't found any that are better, other than from a graphical interface standpoint.
Yeah, the printouts have a lot to be
designed. The interface isn't as good, but the engine is fabulous on the back end. And if the engine, they're really good if we find a problem with the engine, like it won't handle a certain situation. I've reached out to them in the past, and they've modified the engine in order to handle what we were asking. So I think we could get the right answer for you with the calculation through this analysis software, and you have a unique enough situation where it definitely would be worth
it. Would be, because my mind is thinking, if the wife, who is 8 years older than him, if she files now, which would make no sense not to, even if there's some benefit, she can't be deemed, because he's 8 years younger than he's no way near being old enough for Social Security, so she can't be deemed. But when he turns his on later and she goes to turn to a spousal, it will be permanently reduced, but I don't think by a whole heck of a lot.
Yes, but they'll have the benefit, much like our last caller,
of all these years, exactly,
and all the years of other benefits. So, yes.
Yeah, and I wasn't necessarily thinking of, even if she filed early, I hadn't even thought about her filing early, because I just figured, oh, well, that'd permanently reduce her benefits.
It would permanently reduce hers, but the majority of hers, I'm guessing, is going to be yours.
It's coming from yours.
That spousal offset is going to be the same. What happens is her benefit gets reduced, yes. But if her benefit isn't that great to be, and we have to crunch the numbers on all this. There's a lot of moving parts.
Right.
But it's telling me that the last listener, I don't know if you heard him, his break even, and why he's going to go ahead and do it to get some benefits to his kids, is age 88. I think you're going to see a very long break even if she claims early, as opposed to waiting. She would have to perhaps live well into her late 80s as well, where it becomes a point of, hey, it's not worth it, especially over the time value of money. A dollar today is going to be worth a hell of a lot more than a dollar in her 80s. So it's, to me, a compelling calculation.
Yeah, and you're at the age where you need to do that, because once you pull the trigger on claiming, you can't easily undo it. And for most people, you just can't undo it. There are some exceptions, but the undo process is not pleasant and not easy. So you want to make sure you have all your ducks in a row before you pull the trigger on any strategy. And that would involve, like I said, the analysis. So I'd really encourage you to let us do one of those official analyses.
What I would say, George, because we have your contact info, if we don't, make sure you get it to Laura. But Chris will look into our software to make sure it can model this. It is a very, very potent program. If for some reason it can't, Chris will probably reach out. You'll reach out to the founder.
I will, because he kind of has a... it's a pride issue that he doesn't want to have a scenario that they can't calculate.
We have in the past given him scenarios that he couldn't calculate, and then they quickly fix their program to calculate it.
Right.
So you're not the only person with a disabled child. So I would be shocked if this program, which is a very powerful program, doesn't have it, but I would be equally shocked that if he was to say, and we're not going to program it in because of this, that, or the other thing. Yeah. Now, I can't promise you that they're going to have it programmed by the end of next month, but I'm thinking in my mind, I'm real curious on this. I'm thinking the wife should claim at 62 early. She's not working anymore, is she?
No.
Okay.
No.
I don't think the reduction is going to be meaningful enough. And because of all the extra years, 8 to 16 years of collecting these benefits, depending on when George claims, that's going to be a big matzo ball to overcome with earning a higher amount by waiting. I just don't think the what she's going to give up on the spousal, Chris, is going to be able to make delaying worth it.
I agree.
And my son wouldn't be giving up anything, right?
He would not be giving up anything, correct, since he's disabled.
Because he would be getting benefits under my wife till I file and then switch to benefits under me.
Correct. Correct. There should no issue with his.
That wouldn't reduce it. So he was getting it under her early.
If you were going to claim early, then yes, it would hurt your son because there would be a lower family benefit amount that he could get access to. But they're not going to penalize your son by saying, oh, we're not going to give you a disability benefit under your father because your mother claimed earlier. We're going to give you that smaller one. You have no choice. To the best of my knowledge, it doesn't work that way.
No, it shouldn't work that way. And so by the time you claim, then it's all going to depend, of course, if you decide ultimately to claim early or not. But I suspect collecting hers with his benefit underneath that, and then you making it at least till full retirement age, if not beyond, that can have an effect. Now, with a spouse that's so much older than you, that also the question lies, you know, am I going to delay all the way to 70, or does it make more sense at full retirement age just because she's already going to be 75 when you reach your full retirement age?
Right. That was my other thought was with all of these, with the spousal and child benefit not increasing after full retirement age, only my benefit goes up. Is that correct?
Yeah, but it would boil down to me to longevity. Longevity, yeah. In my opinion, is the single greatest determining factor on Social Security. And because if you're only going to live to 75, there's no need to delay. If you're going to live to 95, if you think longevity is in your family or your wife's longevity, you may only have a longevity to 75, but she might live to 95, and the age difference between you is far less removed in the calculation because your benefit, which is the larger benefit, will continue until the last person passes away, you or your wife. And that's what I would be most interested in maximizing. So even
isn't it just two years worth?
No, should be more than 2 years because your full retirement age is going to be 67. So it'll be 3 years worth.
Full years, so 24% higher benefit
for life.
And now with you, it's a little different. We usually focus a lot on survivorship benefits. You generally for the female, since males tend to die earlier, but you have kind of an offset in your age differences. That's say non-traditional,
right.
And but still, even if she's the one who passes away earlier, you're not going to be receiving any. You're going to be just getting one benefit. Her spousal is going to go away, and you'll be left with just your own, and then the child benefit underneath that.
Right.
So,
I assume that would be the same as her and my without my son. Right. 150% of mine.
Basically, yes. Yep. Sometimes the numbers tend to be turn out to be a little different.
If the wife waited to her full retirement age to claim, and he claimed at his full retirement age.
Well, once they're under his benefit, then.
Right, but she won't quite get 50% of his PIA because she's going to claim hers early in my scenario.
Correct. If she claims early, she's going to be getting a little bit less. So when it switches
if she were to pass away,
there'd be a
my son
bump.
And I would be getting 150.
Which would be a little bump from what you were getting before because the early reduction that she generated by claiming at 62 would go away.
Would go away.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, just all those lost, like you, Jim was saying, the time. Just
the opportunity cost.
Man,
could be 8 to 16 years of lost opportunity cost. Time value of money. A dollar today is worth more than a dollar tomorrow. So it just,
yeah.
I won't know until we crunch the numbers. It just, for the life of me, I think it would make sense. Now, of course, for all listeners, you and every iTunian or Androidian listening, when we do a Social Security analysis, that's all we're analyzing is Social Security. We're not going to tell you which option you should choose, which claiming you should do. We're not doing a full plan. We're just looking at Social Security. There could be other things in your financial life that even though, hey, this is the way you optimize Social Security, it's great, but this is what you need to do. There could be other things in your life going on that we're not going to look at. Our Social Security analysis just analyzes Social Security, but it's not necessarily the ideal claiming strategy for your particular situation.
Right. Usually the right. other overriding issue is some kind of a tax issue or timing issue of recognizing income. There can be advantages or disadvantages to coordinating when income occurs or doesn't occur.
Well, absolutely. So, the tax yeah. issues of claiming early are definitely going to be there because your wife is going to be filing joint with you. Your earnings are probably substantial enough where up right. to 85% of her Social Security is going to be dragged into the taxes.
Yep.
So, but again, you don't let the tax tail wag the dog or something like that. Did I say that right?
So her, it would be earnings, but it's not like the earnings test where it gets wiped out.
Wouldn't subject to the earnings test because
she's not working.
So no earnings okay. test. But if you weren't
but
working, for instance, let's pretend you weren't working or you weren't in the picture. If she's just collecting her Social Security and then the child benefit going to the child, she'd have none of her Social Security subject to taxes. Because
right.
she gets combined with you on a joint tax return where you still are earning your wages at your career job, she's
right.
going to be sucked into 85% of her Social Security right. being subject to taxes. So there's another variable in this whole thing.
Yeah,
but don't let taxes.
That's going to be forever.
Yeah,
that's,
don't let taxes be the deciding yeah. factor. You got to give taxes; it's a necessary evil. But I still think claiming early is makes sense. Yeah. But what we're just saying is that there are other items at play here. But I think right now the break even point, even with her claiming early, for 8 to 16 years of claiming sooner. It just the time value of money is going to be a big matzo ball to overcome.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I hadn't even thought about her claiming early. I was just thinking about her claiming at 66.
Oh, see, that's why you call.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's why you don't do your own surgery and I don't do my own retirement
that's right.
planning, right?
That's precisely. I am not going to operate on myself. But since I have you on the phone,
I'm not going to let Jim operate on me either.
I've got this lump on me. Can you tell me? No. So anything else?
They say, "Hey doc, it hurts when I do this." And you say, "Well, stop doing that. Yeah. That'll be $35."
$35. Wow! I got to hire you as my doctor.
So, any other questions, George?
No, that was it. I'm glad I called because I really hadn't even given a thought to filing early for her to file early even.
Well, when I heard she was 62 or soon to be 62, I thought, why wait? And again, I don't know until we crunch the numbers, but it's
yeah.
a compelling thought.
Yeah,
right.
It changes the
well,
game
I think
when you have those additional family benefits. It can oftentimes completely change the normal recommendation.
Yeah. And boy, I tell you, that's the how they calculate family benefits has got to be one of the closest held secrets by the Social Security Department.
Yeah, isn't that nice? I've looked into it a couple times, and I get to the point where I understand it just enough where I stop looking at it, and then literally a couple months later, I have to go relearn it again. And I found I just have fallen back on the most everyone is going to be at the 50% family limit. And this is how generally the child benefits are calculated. And that usually gets us 90% of the time within a few dollars. But there's always these exceptions where if you really follow the letter of the formula and the rules, it is extraordinarily complicated. And most people even working for Social Security couldn't explain it to you.
I also think survivor benefits can be so complicated as well. They sound easy, but especially if the decedent dies before they're claiming. And
or if the original, what we call the number holder, which is the person who earned the benefit, if they claimed early and then died while they were still pretty young,
yep.
there's special alterations of the formula so that the widow isn't penalized quite so heavily for the person having filed early.
It's and that's really that's where we say thank goodness for the software.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, I had a it doesn't pertain as much anymore, but I went into Social Security not long after my son was declared disabled. And I was just reading through this the survivor of a disabled child benefits that they had. In other words, he needs full care. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they provide a spousal benefit even before her retirement age. And I went into Social Security office and showing them the pamphlet and the portion of the law, and they didn't seem to be able to say, yes, I agree that that is what she would be entitled to. I mean, they were saying, nope, she won't get anything until she's 62. So it was very, you know, for me, it was disconcerting that if something happened to me, they would tell her no, and she may not get what she was entitled to. And I don't know how you.
And we've been hearing about that in the news recently. There's been some articles come out that there's several, and it was hundreds of millions of dollars mm-hmm. of widows' benefits that were not paid to survivors properly because the offices weren't handling the adjustments.
It was this very thing we were just talking about. Right. It's so complicated.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah.
And
well,
only
and the person
an
who's making the decision, the person who's making the decisions is like somebody, it's like somewhere in the back. You never can talk to him. It's like,
very rarely do they stick their head out. Occasionally, I've heard of people being able to speak face-to-face with the technical expert, which is who that person is called. And those people generally know their stuff. I'm very impressed, actually, when people get to... I rarely hear someone getting bad advice from a technical expert as far as how things work or how things are calculated. It occasionally still happens with them, but almost never. Usually once they come out, and then they will correct the agent and say, no, they're exactly right. What they heard on the retirement IRA show is true, or whatever the statement might be. And I have great respect for the technical experts because they have gone full nerd into the operations manual, and I cannot imagine the amount of hours of training they've gone through to know what they know. They've been around a lot of times for decades and decades. Hopefully they're not all 65 years old themselves and about ready to leave, because that will put those offices in a huge hole.
Well, another 10, 15 years, everyone will have Watson computers that will know all
maybe,
this.
Maybe. We'll see.
All righty. Well, yeah, thanks a bunch.
Hey, thanks. I also wanted to make sure I called in and got on the... You were getting so few phone calls. I was like, man, I got to call in.
Well, yeah.
And get in. Somebody's already ahead of me today.
Today we had two, but we're encouraging all our iTunians and Androidians, give us a call. We don't bite. Let us help you. We do this because we enjoy it. Yes, we are live practicing financial advisors, and people can hire us if they want. But this is our time of giving back and answering questions, and we enjoy doing this.
Yep.
I appreciate it. And we'll be getting the Social Security analysis, and you've already given me a coffee and a second opinion and probably following up on that, so I appreciate both.
Okay, perfect. We'll talk to thanks Laura. She'll straighten you out on all this.
Yep. And
all right, very good, thanks.
Have a nice afternoon in Missouri.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Isn't it evening in Missouri? I think they're on Central Eastern time, aren't they? Or are they Central?
I think they're Central, so it's 5:44. I still consider that afternoon until it's 6. In my book, 6 is kind of evening.
I think 5-6. Is there a technical answer? Is there a real time when it becomes evening?
Yeah, 6.
6? Okay.
I don't know. I just made that up. But I felt if I said it with confidence, you might buy into it.
Well, that's an interesting case. Mm-hmm. I initially thought right away have her claim at 62, not her full retirement age, only because of the time value of money. And with her benefits being so low, the permanent reduction is going to be so minor.
Right.
In the grander scheme of things.
That and you factor in the large age difference, there that changes a lot of this because mm-hmm. it lessens, in my mind, some of the concern over the longevity of the female outlasting the wage earner, the majority wage earner. But he's kind of taken the edge off that concern by choosing to marry someone who's 8 years older than he is.
Mm-hmm.
So not everyone does that. But it's just a little side effect that, you know, shifts the teeter-totter of what to do maybe a little bit. So,
well, the
I'll
the,
be interested to see what the software
the
tells
person
us.
Earlier who mm-hmm. I had a coffee and a second opinion call with earlier today was the same situation where the woman, I believe, was 7 or 8 years older than mm-hmm. than the man.
Yep.
And they were being faced with some of these unique planning challenges as well. It's one thing when husband and wife, doesn't matter who's younger, who's older. It's one thing, though, when they're the same age or within a year or two. But you start getting into a 8, 10, 12-year age difference, there's some unique planning strategies where sometimes the normal rules of thumb need to go out.
Correct.
But in this particular case, I was just thinking of the time value of money over the next 8 to 16 years. Again, I keep saying it's going to be a huge hill or matzo ball, as I put it, to overcome.
You're big on are you hungry?
No,
it's
kind of like
talk about matzo balls.
No, but that's kind of like it was on Seinfeld. Jerry, that's when
recently.
It was the I Love You episode where George was telling Jerry he was going to tell his girlfriend I love you. And Jerry said,
oh, that was on recently because I saw that in the past couple of weeks.
And Jerry is, you know, asking, are you sure you're going to get the I Love You back? Because there's nothing. It's a pretty big matzo ball to throw out an I love you and you don't get an I love you back. Of course, George didn't get the I love you back. And so anyways, I just saw that Seinfeld recently. So I just thought, yeah, matzo ball. Okay. That's a pretty big matzo ball. Perfect. That's a, what is a matzo ball? That's a Jewish soup, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in the soup. And it's
but is it something different? Is it not like a meatball? Just
no, it's matzo.
There's a thing called matzo?
I don't know. I thought matzo was meat.
But maybe it has to be what, kosher? Like a kosher meatball? I don't know.
It probably is kosher.
But there's a soup. It's called matzo ball soup.
I understand. But
what if you could put matzo balls on spaghetti?
So you can put anything on spaghetti. So they are dumplings made from a mixture of matzo meal. So there is matzo.
There's matzo.
Yeah.
All right.
Eggs, water, and a fat such as oil, margarine, or chicken fat.
So there's no meat in it.
They're traditionally served in chicken soup and are a staple food on Passover.
So there's no meat in it. All right.
There's eggs. No, that's not meat.
That's not
but
meat.
There's some animal product in there, and then chicken fat. So I guess you might call that a meat substitute or something.
Interesting. So I always thought it was made out of hamburger and it looked like a meatball. Apparently not.
No, it's more like I was going to say dumpling, but I thought it. So it's kind of like a dumpling.
All right.
What I don't know is what matzo meal is. Is main ingredient matzo meal?
Sounds like cornmeal or something like that.
Let's see what matzo meal is. This is.
See what you get on the Retirement and IRA Show. You get what matzah is as well. But I believe that's going to take us to the end of today's show, if memory serves me correct, because it's almost 5. I got to drive home.
Matzah is an unleavened cracker-like bread that is traditionally eaten at Passover.
Unleavened, that means it's
and
flat
water.
And dry,
so,
right? Isn't that what unleavened
matzah
is?
Matzah meal is made by finely grinding matzah crackers into a breadcrumb-like consistency. So it's breadcrumbs made from those unleavened crackers.
Interesting.
Yeah. Learn something new every day. I didn't know that.
So we had two great Social Security questions. I want to thank our iTunian and Droidian listeners, encourage you to call. And as this previous caller said, you can also schedule what we call a coffee and a second opinion. We may be based in Colorado. We're kind of the small firm. Our firm kind of reminds me of that little, what is that parable there? The little train that could. A little engine that could or something like that going up a hill. And
little engine that could.
Little engine that could. Mm-hmm. We may be a small firm, but we have a wide reach. We can do it.
Because of the internet.
Because of the
internet.
It's
a beautiful thing.
But we do counsel with people throughout the nation. We have a unique business model. You actually just pay us for our advice. You don't have to buy anything from us. You don't have to invest with us. And in fact, let's face it, Chris, most of our iTunian and Androidian listeners are do-it-yourselfers. Because if you weren't, you're not going to be downloading this podcast and listening to it. So you're just trying to learn and teach yourself, but you're probably managing your own money or doing something of that effect, and you're just looking for a second opinion or to work with advisors who aren't going to insist you roll over all your money to them so they can charge you 1% and manage all your money. That's not what we do. You actually pay us for our time. Unique concept in my industry, I know. But I remember recently I was talking to a colleague of mine, can't say he can't stand it, doesn't understand our business model. And he said to me, he says, how are you going to make a living just billing people? And I looked at
because
them.
Because they pay when, when we build them.
Well, I told them, I said, you know, for what, hundreds if not thousands of years, attorneys have done a pretty damn good job on it. Right. So if attorneys can do it, why can't we? And he looked at me and he said, I never thought of it that way. It just, it's just archaic. They think they have to, oh, no, you got to move your money over to me, and I got to charge you 1.5%, 2% of your assets. And then I'll throw financial planning in off to the side. No, why don't you just pay us for the advice you want? You want asset management? We offer asset management. You need tax preparation? We offer tax preparation. You need a retirement plan, Social Security advice, Medicare advice, long-term care planning. You just hire us for the advice you need and don't hire us for the advice you don't need. Radical concept, is it not?
Shocking. It's totally shocking.
But anyways, if you are an iTunian out there and that sounds appealing, don't hesitate to schedule a coffee and a second opinion. If you go to our website, Jim Helps, right now there's a blue mug. I have no idea why the mug is blue, but there is a blue mug for our calendar. It's a coffee mug, so she thought coffee and a second opinion.
Yeah. What's wrong with blue?
I don't know. First of all, we don't have a blue mug. So she took a picture of our actual coffee. That is our actual coffee mug, or one. We have more than one. But that is one of our coffee mugs that she photoshopped blue. And she explained to me why it's blue. And it made sense to her.
It's comforting color, and maybe it's a marketing thing.
I have no idea. But she made the coffee mug blue. That's a photoshopped coffee mug, but an actual picture of a coffee mug from our office.
Wow.
So that's currently the visual for the coffee and a second opinion. On the new website, which is ready to go, we got the cartoon video back. We have a new video coming out that I hired an English firm to make. I was a little worried wiring thousands of dollars over to England, and the bank didn't make it any easier. You realize, sir, she said before she wired the money, as soon as I click pay, I cannot get this back. Do you trust this company? And I'm like, well, no, I've never met them, but I talked to them on the phone. They seem trustworthy. And it did work out. So we just proofed it, but unfortunately there were 5 mistakes in it. 3 were their mistakes, 2 were ours. We're going to see if they can fix them all. But we have a new video that kind of captures the essence of Jim Salling Associates that should be coming out shortly once we get these mistakes fixed. That will be on the homepage, but a whole new redo, Chris. So all of you iTunians and Androidians who have been to our website, our homepage, total redo. It's going to look similar, yet very, very different. And I think it's going to actually read a lot crisper, a lot cleaner, looks a lot more modern.
With a British accent.
No. They used an American voiceover person.
I was kidding. I know.
But they all had wicked heavy English accents. Mm-hmm. But it's the bank doesn't make it easy when they're wiring several thousand dollars to an overseas bank account. Do you really trust this company? She warned me several times. She scared the hell out of me. But it did work, and everything was fine.
Perfect.
But that is coming, so people can come to our website and check that out. But we did want to share with our dedicated iTunians and Androidians, we are a actual financial planning firm, and you can hire us if the advice and philosophy that we share with you seems to resonate.
Perfect. Well, that's gotten us through another Retirement IRA Show podcast edition. Even better yet, a live podcast edition, as you could tell when people called in. Those were real live people that called in live while we were recording this.
And since we don't know yet, keep listening. There may or may not be the Colorado Show tacked on to the end of this show. We haven't decided that yet. If it is not there, it will be next week's podcast. If it is there, we have another whole show to do that you will hear in another week, because Chris will be on spring break to an undisclosed location.
Warm location.
You're going to tell us when you come back where you're going?
I'll be happy to share when I get back.
You're going to have pictures?
It's a little hard to share on the radio.
How about gifts for a certain person in the room?
I don't know. We'll see.
Just saying, you know. I want more than I went on spring break and all's what I got is this lousy t-shirt. Want something better?
Well, that
than
sounds
that.
A little extravagant. A t-shirt.
Oh, a t-shirt. Wow. Yeah.
So we'll see everybody next week here on the Retirement and IRA Show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning, They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Rocky Mountain High, Colorado. Rocky Mountain High.
Well, good morning and welcome to this week's Retirement and IRA Show, Colorado edition. Hope your day is starting out well. The topics for today, I believe we're going to talk about some tax-related issues that particularly pertain to retirement. Taxes, as we've mentioned many times before, are a significant detriment or cash outflow when it comes to your retirement, something that has to be considered. And you obviously, when possible, want to make choices that will lessen your tax burden so that you've got more to spend in retirement. So whenever there's tax changes or tax issues that come up, they affect everybody who are taxpayers. But in particular, there's some unique things that come up with retirement, and people need to be paying attention to tax issues as they approach and enter their retirement years in particular. So, Jim is here with us as well. He even has his microphone on, ready to go.
I'm spot on.
He's spot on. Digging through some emails, because I'm pretty sure we're going to answer some other questions as well. But I know he wanted to make some comments about some tax-related issues directly connected to the tax reform that passed here back in December of 2017. I always forget the name because it's not a nice acronym like they usually come up with, isn't it? The Tax Reduction and Jobs Act of something of 2017, something like that. But it's not a nice clean acronym. So I just call it the new tax changes for that go into effect in 2018, passed in December of 2017. So, Jim, do we have an email on this question, or did you just have something to share, or do you want to start with an email question first? I'm flexible.
You are flexible. I want to welcome all our Northern Colorado listeners this Saturday morning on KFKA. Hopefully it's a nice Saturday. I don't know if it's going to be as nice as it was last Saturday. Of course, today is Monday as we record this, and it's windy and cold as heck out there. But it's supposed to be nice, I think, on Saturday.
I think so.
So this isn't going to be a Colorado-specific show. There's just a couple of things I want to run by. And we also have a few email questions. But I think what we'll do first is pick up, and it all started, as just luck would have it, Ed Slott sent out an alert this morning. And they must get all excited because they put in the title, Elite Alert, Email Alert.
Sounds very dramatic.
It is. It's like, This must be real interesting to them. It was interesting to me, but they really get into it over there in the Ed Slott group. But what the alert was, folks, is a little change in the estate gift tax and generation skipping tax exemption amounts. Now, I know everyone listening is going, first of all, and do we really need to worry about this? Who cares? And you technically don't need to worry about it, most people listening, because the differences are there's an $11 million plus or minus estate tax exemption. Who cares if it's going to be a little bit lower than what people thought instead of $11 million, Chris? It's still 99.9% of the U.S. public isn't going to pay an estate tax because they don't have more than $11 million.
Right.
But it's the point behind it that Ed was sharing. And then as luck would have it this morning, as I was eating my breakfast burrito, which I eat in the office, there was a new article, a little small article, New Tax Laws Hidden Cost. And that's what Ed just happened to come out with. Mm-hmm. So when I saw both today, an article on the hidden tax cost and an alert from the Ed Slott Group, I thought maybe we should talk about this.
Yeah.
So we're going to chat a little bit because I agree, listeners. It's not going to apply to probably everyone listening to this radio show this fine Saturday morning, or to our iTunians and Androidians who are listening to this on their podcast apps at their leisure. It's probably not going to apply to most of you until you understand. Yes, that's the key.
Yet.
Because what they did in the recent tax cut bill, it's a law now, it's not a bill, is kind of the way the government first started taxing Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
They made the limits to having Social Security taxed so high, it really didn't impact most people and they just didn't think anything about it. Because they didn't begin the tax until you were making, are you ready for this, Chris? The ungodly amount of $25,000 in retirement. Only if you made more than that did you have to worry about your Social Security being taxed. And in 1983,
mm-hmm. That was a lot. That was a lot.
And there weren't too many retirees in 1983. Baby boomers were still mm-hmm. working.
Yep, because as part of that $25,000, you might think, well, that doesn't seem like very much, but you have to roll your mind back to 1983. Plus, as part of that calculation, they only counted half of your Social Security in that total. So you technically could have more than $25,000 coming in and still avoid all taxation of your Social Security benefits because of the special treatment of Social Security benefits themselves.
The taxation of Social Security is convoluted. Yeah. Ask any retiree who's receiving Social Security. It is a real convoluted calculation to determine how much Social Security is taxed. And I should have said, actually, I never really said about the taxes. I just said it would only impact you if you had more than $25,000 or the ungodly amount of $25,000. But if you read, most people who know what they're saying, Chris, will write, if they're writing an article, up to 50% will be taxed. Because it doesn't simply mean, as Chris just said, $1 over $25,000 and boom, half of your Social Security is being taxed, or all of your Social Security is being taxed. It's not the way it works. And it's a very, very, I won't say difficult because computers make it easy now, but it is not a very straightforward calculation to determine how much of your Social Security will be subject to taxes. The point I'm trying to make is that $25,000 number was never adjusted for inflation.
And is still in effect today. Here in 2018, all the way from 1983.
And
so we're what, 35 years now? Boy, and that makes me feel old.
I recently read an article that said if that number was increased for inflation, it would be $58,000 today.
Which sounds like a lot, again, as just like $25,000 sounded like a lot in 1983, and only the super rich people that had that kind of income would be affected by it. So everybody was fine with it because it didn't affect them.
And if you were single, which these are the single numbers, the married couple numbers were 35,000, not quite double the single rates. It wasn't 50,000, but it was 35,000 if you were married. Now, it's a lot easier for a married couple to reach 35,000 than a single person to reach 50,000. But today, if you are a single person like myself and retired, unlike myself, and you were receiving Social Security, up to half of your Social Security would be taxed if you were earning more than $58,000. Big difference. And not a lot of people are earning $58,000. And even if you were earning a little bit more than $58,000, it might mean a little bit of your Social Security would be subject to tax, not enough to really upset you. But now, it's not hard for a single person or a married couple to earn more than $25,000 or $35,000 in today's dollars. It's not hard at all. And can you imagine, Chris, because you're only 5 years behind me, in another 10, 15 years when we're collecting Social Security, it's going to be even easier to reach those numbers.
Yep.
And by time Justin retires, we'll be dead, but everyone will be making that much. Are you kidding? That'll be your monthly income. By time that kid gets to retirement age, that's another 40 years for him. So that's what we call stealth tax increases. And that's the first thing that has happened now. So what did the government do? If you think back, I'll explain before I get into that. What the government did, folks, is instead of adjusting the tax brackets, you know how we have different brackets, folks. We used to have the 15 bracket and the 25 bracket and the 33. Now, I know Justin keeps telling me these Don brackets. He's not here today. He's meeting with some tax clients. But what is it, 12 and 22, right? And then I forget where it goes. Do you remember the new brackets?
Oh, I think I have them.
He printed them out for us.
No, I've got them.
But in this pile of papers on our desk, I
just
can't find
saw
them.
Oh, they're on my desk.
Your desk.
I can run back and get
them. No, I got this thing right here. It's called Google.
Oh, that works too.
So I can just say new.
They haven't been around long enough for me to memorize them. And actually, I'm thankful that I didn't go to the work of memorizing every detail of the old brackets, because now they don't matter.
Well, in 2026, they'll come back.
Well, I doubt it.
You don't think so?
No. I think they'll pass something to change them. May not stay what they are now, but I don't think they'll just let them flop back to exactly where they were before. That's my guess.
Doing nothing gets a lot done for them. It raises taxes if they did nothing. See, the one thing I can't look up on here, because we have lousy internet in this room. Have you ever noticed that?
It's not the strongest.
It just, I get that little iPad thing that goes around and around and around and around and around. See, it won't load. Just sits here.
That's why I offered to run, get it off my desk.
Why is the internet in this office so slow?
I don't know. I don't experience that on my phone.
But we're renting this room. Not that I want to talk about it now. You're going to have to fix it, because no one is going to rent this room if their Wi-Fi is this incredibly
slow. They're going to plug into the wall.
Can we put just a little booster thing in here for them?
Like I said, it's mostly your device. It's not, my phone's fine.
You're blaming Apple?
No, I'm blaming your specific device, the one assigned to you.
I bought it
Jim Saulnier.
I didn't do anything but buy it from Apple.
Because I look up stuff just fine on my phone. With the Wi-Fi, it works fine.
Whatever. So anyways, we have new brackets, and what they do every year, so the brackets are 10%, 12%, 22%, 24%, 32, 35, and 37. But what they do every year, folks, is they adjust those brackets for inflation. So under the new laws, folks, anything up to $9,525 would be taxed at 10%. And then between $9,526 to $38,700 is taxed at 12%. So you have these different rates. And if I understand correctly, there's a certain amount of money you can make right off the bat. Isn't the first $5,000 or $10,000 tax-free, the president said or promised? Did that ever happen?
Well, there's a certain amount of your income. That's always the low-income people. It's completely tax-free, yes.
That wasn't my question. I'll figure it out. I'll ask Justin next time I see him. I thought there was a certain amount of money you could make and not pay any taxes on it. You're looking at me like I have three eyes.
Well, kind of. That's always been the case. According That's not to, new.
Okay, it's not new.
No,
okay.
No, there was a certain amount of income you could always have where there was absolutely no tax.
And then above that, because right now, according to this Forbes article where I'm getting these numbers from, because we can't find the paper that we had, it said up to $9,525 will be taxed at 10%. So it's telling me there is no zero tax bracket for anyone, that from your first dollar to your $9,525 dollar, it's going to be taxed at 10%. But I know that's not how it works.
No, especially when you have exemptions.
Correct.
Right. So in the standard deduction and that sort of thing. It depends on your filing status. If you're a student or dependent under somebody else, the situation is completely different. There is still the rule, though, if you make less than about, it's right about, it's changes with inflation, but about $6,500, you don't even have to file a tax return. So definitely at that level, there's no tax, because they're not even asking you to file a return.
Gotcha.
If you're below that amount.
Well, let me explain to our listeners where this new adjustment to inflation comes in. They're supposed to increase these income limits, folks, every year by inflation. Because if your income is rising because of inflation, it could push you into higher brackets. If the first $9,525 is taxed at 10, and then between $9,526 and $38,700 is taxed at 12, and then anything above $38,700 is taxed at 22, and then anything above $82,000 is taxed at 24, you can see if those brackets, folks, didn't move, just like the taxation bracket for Social Security when it was passed in 1983 never moved. Well, what if they were to freeze or slow down the growth of those income tax brackets? What would happen, folks? Listen to this. Just play it out in your minds. What would happen is if the brackets aren't increasing, but your pay is, and you're earning more money, which is what everybody wants. You want to earn more money every year. So you're either going to work longer or get pay raises or better yourself and get an education and get higher pay. If your pay is going up, but the brackets aren't increasing, more and more of your dollars are getting taxed at higher and higher brackets. It would be a stealth tax increase if they could slow the growth of the brackets down. Very similar to what Reagan's the one who first started taxing Social Security. I know a lot of our KFK listeners are talk radio folk, and they may be big Reagan fans, and Reagan has this reputation as being a tax cutter. Well, he did. He cut taxes, but he also increased them. And where he increased them was on Social Security recipients, because prior to Reagan, Social Security was never taxed. And then after Reagan, up to half was taxed. And then Bill Clinton, exactly 20 years later in 1993, excuse me, 10 years later in 1993, Bill Clinton started taxing up to 85% of your Social Security benefits.
He didn't personally do it.
Well, he signed it.
Congress is in charge of that.
They signed it. Clinton and Reagan could have said no. They didn't. They signed it. So the blame goes, buck stops at the top. You know that. So Reagan and Clinton get the dubious distinction, rightly or wrongly, of taxing Social Security. What I'm simply trying to say is in both cases, folks, it was specifically written into the law that these brackets for the taxation of Social Security will not increase at all. Well, the Republicans in this recent tax cut came out and they didn't quite take that extreme measure. They didn't say, hey, we're going to freeze these brackets. But what they did do, Chris, is take an idea from a president that they hated, Barack Obama. Rightly or wrongly, seems like the right hated Obama and it seems like the left hates Trump. But under Barack Obama, he first proposed what is known as the chain CPI. And he first proposed increasing Social Security by chained CPI instead of regular CPI. Well, that went over like a lead balloon. Mm-hmm. That received no traction in a Republican Congress. But when the Republicans took over, they probably sat around saying, hey, you know, that Barack guy, he wasn't that dumb. He had a pretty good idea. Why don't we increase the tax brackets by chained CPI instead of regular CPI? And since chained CPI is a lower calculation, what's the net result?
More and more of your income increases as you get raises, as what's called wage inflation occurs, which is already generally higher than CPI, even higher still than chained CPI. More and more of your income gets captured within the higher brackets themselves because your income goes up faster. So you start to push past these bracket limits, exposing more of your income to higher tax rates.
And the brackets aren't moving as fast.
Correct. They are moving at least, which the Social Security limits
don't move,
haven't moved since 1983. But they're going to be move at a slower rate than your wages, which they already did, honestly.
Because
wage inflation
is higher than
CPI. Chained is less even than regular CPI. So it's just a way to, it's like, you know, you put the frog in the pot when it's cool and you turn up the heat slowly, the frog doesn't jump out.
People aren't going to notice, but right. Every year your taxes are higher than they should have been under the old rules. So what is chained CPI? Chain CPI is very similar to the CPI you know, the CPI that Social Security uses, which is CPI-W. And in this case, the W stands for urban wage workers. Urban begins with a U, but it's not CPI-U, it's CPI-W. That is one of the greatest mysteries. I share this all the time. What bureaucrat just decided, and I'm sure there's a reason, and someone might write to me and say, hey, you idiot, this is the reason it's called CPI-W. I wonder if it stands for wage worker instead of urban wage worker.
It's probably worker-urban.
I don't know. But it's CPI-W, which is the CPI for the urban wage worker. Okay, chained CPI is essentially that CPI with a lot of, let's say, opinions built into it. What do I mean by that? Chained CPI is where the Department of Labor, who tracks all this, isn't it the Labor Department or is there another department?
BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Mm-hmm. So it's not really the Department of Labor, it's the BLS.
Correct.
Are they a sub-department of the Department of Labor, or are they just all by themselves?
I don't remember under what hierarchy they exist. Yeah, well, couldn't tell.
Bureau of Labor Statistics are a bunch of geeks who, and I say that in a good way, but they're number crunchers, and they come up with all these statistics. What they do, folks, with chain CPI is they make very broad, in my opinion, assumptions that as the price of one thing goes up, human behavior will dictate people will cut and save where they can. What does that mean in English? Let's just say the price of ground beef rises a lot. Let's say some mad cow disease comes back and kills all the cows, and beef is going through the roof. They feel people will eat maybe ground hamburger or ground turkey or ground chicken. Mm-hmm. They're saying if the price of a new computer rises a lot, maybe you'll get a smaller hard drive, and that will actually lower your cost instead of increasing your cost. So they put human emotions or human behavior into the CPI.
They factor in what are called substitutions, where you might substitute something else because the first choice that you had gone up in price. You won't continue to pay the higher price. You'll instead jump to something with a lower price.
That's exactly what they're doing.
Exactly.
But I think there's a lot of guesswork on their behalf because people don't all operate the same. I'll tell you, I don't like ground turkey. I don't find it as good as ground beef. So some people aren't going to just say, okay, I'm going to stop eating ground beef. I'm going to eat ground turkey.
Some people will, though.
Some people will, some people don't. But you can, I just think there's a lot of broad ambiguity in how they're just going to assume CPI isn't as bad because you're just going to stop consuming things if they go up in price. And you're going to keep your own personal rates of inflation low. So if coffee gets too high, you're going to drink tea. Or you're going to re-dry your beans and use them again. Or whatever the case is. And I just think that there's a lot of broad assumptions. But through this calculation, they can keep these brackets reduced. And that's what Ed sent his email out this morning. The brackets for the estate tax, for the generation skipping tax, and for gifting had to be adjusted lower than what Ed thought because of the new chain CPI. And now he has to reprint, he said, all these things that he had already printed. So we'll talk about some of those changes, but to me, this is just the canary in the coal mine of how this is going to stealthily increase your taxes.
Perfect. So that music means we're at the end of the first segment of the Retirement and IRA Show. When we come back from this short break, we're going to hear one of the top songs from 1935 as we look back to the beginning of Social Security, which was born in August of 1935. So stick with us through this short break. We'll be right back with you.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Thank you.
welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That lovely music we just heard is from Ozzie Nelson and his orchestra. It's entitled And Then Some. Went to number one in 1935 and was Ozzie Nelson's biggest hit. So pretty famous song. A lot of people have heard that before. But we look back to that year, 1935, and to kind of, I guess, honor, if you will, the start of Social Security, which is a very prominent topic on the Retirement and IRA Show. So we were talking in the last segment about inflation and how inflation is measured for certain things, mostly adjusting tax brackets and Social Security taxation and things like that. Talked about how Social Security taxation measurements, the limits there, have not changed, were not inflated since they were started back in 1983. Talked about how that would capture more and more people under the taxation net. And we've discussed how the new tax reform that has started in 2018 also changes how the tax brackets adjust for inflation from year to year, which they've done for quite some time, but they've changed the way, or they've changed the measure of inflation from CPIW to CPI, what's called chained CPI. But something that Jim mentioned last time is he wasn't sure why CPIW was called CPIW, and I have the short description of why that is. So from 1913 to 1977, the Bureau of Labor Statistics measured CPI, and they just called it CPI through that time. In 1978, several improvements were made, and because of that, they came out with what's called CPI-U. Okay, CPI-U. Well, let me first say what CPI-W is, because it affects so many things, including your Social Security benefits are tied to CPI-W. So CPI-W is tracks the price changes for groups of urban wage earners and clerical workers. So it's households where more than one half of the whole household's income comes from clerical or wage occupations, and at least one of the household's earners has been employed for at least 37 weeks, blah, blah, blah. That measurement measures essentially about 28% of the total U.S. population. CPIU, which was created in 1978, considers not just wage earners, but all urban consumers. So this is going to include professionals, self-employed, the poor, unemployed, retired people, as well as the urban wage earners and clerical workers that were as part of CPIW. The CPIU measure captures 88% of the total population. So that's the story between the two. And U stands for urban because it's all urban consumers. The W is the wage earners in urban areas. So that's why they use U as the broad umbrella. And the W are the workers within that group.
Well, that's kind of what I said jokingly, but I said maybe the W stands for the wage earner.
It is. Wage earner and workers. Yep. So that's where the makes sense, where the W is. They don't. The urban part comes from, is most reflected in the CPI-U.
Well, they should call it the CPI-UW.
UW. I agree. But we don't make the rules.
No. Okay. So what does all this mean? Right now, nothing, because the law just passed. So updates to the tax brackets haven't really occurred yet, Chris. They're going to occur next year where they adjust the brackets for inflation. It's only this time they're going to be adjusting them to a measure of inflation that is lower. We talked about all that, chained CPI. To give you guys an example, and this comes from the investment news article that I just read you, but it gives an idea of that because in this particular article, they said that, and these numbers come from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Well, actually, the Brookings Institute came out with this statistic, but they got it from the BLS. They said since 2000, so the past 17 years, CPI, the traditional CPI we're talking about, increased by 45.7%. Mm-hmm. While chain CPI during the same time period increased 39.7%. 6 percentage points less, but that's over 10% less increase. It's about a 12%. I don't know my calculator. I'm doing it in math in my head. But about a 12, 13% reduction in the increase of CPI. So that would be lower increase in the tax brackets, meaning more of your income is subject to higher taxes, meaning your taxes are going up every year, even though it looks like they're not. That's the intent of doing this. Now, remember, and this was taken up in the Investment News article, the author's opinion, as he wrote his story, is this is just the beginning. He feels the original Obama recommendation of using chain CPI to increase Social Security will happen. And that this was, again, the Republicans sort of acquiescing. They did not apply it to Social Security, but they took what President Obama, a former President Obama, wanted to do and just applied it to a different part of the federal budget. But if they ever apply it to the increase to Social Security, that, I would argue, is a price cut. But you seem to be in support of the CPI measure, the chain CPI. So perhaps it
isn't. I'm not in support of it.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood that. Perhaps it's not. To people who feel chain CPI is reasonable, that you are going to alter your lifestyle in a rising inflationary environment, therefore your true inflation isn't as bad as it seems, I think is hocus pocus. If I am all of a sudden being forced to eat ground chicken instead of ground beef, that is changing my lifestyle. I can't afford ground beef anymore. I still have to eat, last time I checked, to live. So, I mean, what's next? When you go from ground chicken to Kalo dog food? Oh, well, hey, that's chain CPI. You're just adjusting for a reduction of your spending power. That's not inflation. That's where I just kind of get a little antsy over it. But you can see how it is a lower increase. So here's some of the new numbers that Ed shares with us. Now, the unfortunate thing is he only gave me one number in the email. The rest is coming out in his updated printout, he said, which isn't here yet. But the one number he pointed out, he said, for instance, HSA contribution limits for the family high deductible for those under the age of 55 has been lowered for 2018 from $6,900 to $6,850. $50. But that's in 1 year. So it should have been $6,900. It's now $6,850. So you can put $50 less in. That's what chain CPI does. It's going to allow them to use lower increases, not only in bracket amounts, but as he pointed out, this will slow, because they're supposed to increase in $500 increments, Chris, the contribution limits to IRAs, for instance. This will slow, instead of it happening about every 5 to 7 years, I'm just guessing, but maybe now it's going to happen every 7 to 10 years, where they're going to hit that $500 increment. That $500 increment was being pegged to CPI, and the IRS would just keep track of how much they should raise it every year. And rather than raising it 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 bucks a year, they would just let it accrue. And when all those past accruals reached 500, they would raise the IRA contribution limit $500. This will take longer to do.
Yep. So it's the reason I don't like it, from an economic standpoint, I understand it, and it actually does mimic actual consumer behavior more accurately than the other. As much as you dislike and say, I'm gonna eat beef no matter what, it's true that people do change what they're buying based on price. So that being
said, but
it
doesn't mean we do it willfully. It's just like, well, there was a time I used to be able to buy this. Now I can't. I'm sure, right, given the choice, people would want, as you know, because inflationary adjustments, they call it cost of living adjustments. If my cost of living is going up, I want my income to adjust with it so I don't have to reduce my standard of living. And nobody wants to just say, hey, this is great, but every year I live, I'm going to get less and less. We kind of want more for ourselves. We have this intention of wanting to better ourselves, yet this kind of flies in the face of that. That's my beef
and,
with
and there's really two groups, and you're focused more on the retirement people.
Correct.
Because they've got
We're retirement
income,
planners.
So I understand that. Most people aren't retired, though. Most people are workers.
But we work with retirees
and
pre-retirees.
I understand.
Okay. So anyways, you were saying you can continue
So the part I don't like about it is the stealthy nature to it. I think they should just be up front with collecting taxes. And if they want to collect more taxes, they just say it up front. They don't try to sneak it in under the radar. That's what bothers me about these techniques. That's political games.
It is definitely gamesmanship.
So that's what annoys me about it. Is they're not upfront about it. That you have to have a depth of understanding about taxation and inflation and all these things. Most people don't understand all that.
Well, it boiled down to what we were saying when this tax proposal was being argued in the first place, and all the Republicans who were supporting it, all those Congress people were going back to the constituents saying, I've doubled your personal exemption. I mean, your standard deduction. And you and I kept screaming on our radio show, you're not telling them the whole story. You removed the personal exemption.
Yep.
Okay, you doubled the standard deduction, but I no longer have a personal exemption. So the actual increase wasn't 100%. It was more like 20%. And it just sounds better to say to a constituent, I've increased the amount you can initially deduct on your taxes if you don't itemize by 100%. That sounds great.
Unless you itemize.
Unless you itemize.
Or unless you have a lot of personal exemptions
exactly.
that you relied upon on your tax return. So even if you wasn't the whole story.
Even if you just had one, like I did. I had a standard mm-hmm. deduction and one personal exemption. Mm-hmm. So they say, your standard deduction, Jim, I doubled it. I am great. I am the best congressperson yeah. you ever had. Vote for me again.
And they didn't mention they reached around into your back pocket
and took some money out, right.
Took out the personal exemption.
And when they did that, if you look at the number mm-hmm. difference, it was about 20-25%.
Yep.
But if that congressperson was coming to me and said, I've increased the amount you can deduct by 20%, gee, thanks. While I've cut the corporate tax rate nearly in half. Gee, who are you helping more? You're going to allow me to deduct 20% more income, but you're going to cut the tax rate for corporations nearly by 50%. It wasn't quite 50. It was nearly in half. And it just, so to have a better talking soundbite.
It's all spin.
It's all spin. Yep. Exactly. So that is how stealth taxation works. We've got the first taste of it. I don't have any other examples from Ed. I should have read his email closer. The rest are coming. But I will share them. But this is just the beginning. So
right, and we're only in month three.
Of the tax cut.
Of the first year of this.
That's what I'm
saying.
We're
already seeing a little nibble
of it. Well, yeah, it's $50 less you mm-hmm. can now put into your HSA. That's $50 more that's going to get taxed. Because HSA is a tax deduction up front. It grows tax deferred and comes out tax free. But that's $50 less now that you can get into the family HSA, all thanks to the new inflation adjustment in the Republican tax cuts. So as Chris said, I like his analogy. They put more money. How did you say it? They're giving you more money up front, but they're reaching around your backside or something.
To your back pocket,
your
not
back
your backside.
Well, that's where that your sounds, back pocket is.
Yeah, but that sounds dirty.
No, this isn't a Me Too woman movement. I'm not talking that. I'm saying so they're taking money out of your back pocket as they're putting money in your front pocket.
Yes, but they're, yeah.
Yeah,
and they're only telling you about the part they're putting in there.
Yeah, they're only showing you what they're putting in your front pocket, and they're just sneakily taking out of your back
pocket.
Basically,
anytime they're talking, just call shenanigans on the whole thing and
well,
do your own research.
It goes back to the saying, how do you know when a politician is lying?
Yeah, their mouth is moving.
Yes, lips are moving, yeah.
Yep.
And there's sound coming out of their mouth. So anyways, that's what we wanted to share on today's podcast to just get you to know it wasn't as rich a tax cut as it seems. And for all of you who are sitting there saying, Jim, you're making a mountain out of a molehill. This is no
perfect use of the saying, by the way.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I nailed it. You're just carrying on for nothing. That's the idea. A death by a thousand cuts. They cut you a little here and a little there and a little there. You get 1,000 paper cuts, pretty soon you need a blood transfusion or a blood addition, whatever they call it. Transfusion is when they're taking your blood, right? They're not giving it to you.
Transfusion?
No. When you need blood, you get 1,000 paper cuts, you're going to need blood pretty soon. You're going to run out. So it sounds like a little. $50 here, $50 there, $60 here, $100 there. Pretty soon you're talking real money.
Very quickly.
Yes. Okay.
Perfect.
So do we have time for email question? Or?
We do. Probably one. We've got about 8 minutes left.
Oh, that's going to have to be a real short one that you answer, not me. All right.
Radio silence. That's never a good thing.
Do. Well, I wanted to answer that one. I thought I would answer this one, but I don't think... No. Yeah, we'll have to go with that one. This was a Social Security question, but I'll let you look through this real quickly as I talk about something.
Ooh, that's a lot of words.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's not quite as short as it initially looks.
Yeah, I need to read into that.
You
one.
Want to read? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll go. How about that answer?
Much better.
That's one sentence. Okay, so this gentleman reached out and he says, "Hi, I love your podcast. Keep it up." Well, we intend to. We don't intend to stop this. Can you tell...
Well, someday we do.
Well, maybe you will. We'll just replace you.
I'm going to retire at some point.
And so will I, but our protégés will continue.
Oh, somebody will keep it going?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Maybe it'll be never ending.
We'll have protégés.
Okay.
I think. Can you tell me if you have ever done any shows on IRA aggregation rules? Mm. And if so, can you direct me to the episode?
We have.
We have. So I already reached out
to
him.
It's been a while, but we have.
We have. And the problem is they're not on the website anymore.
Oh, they're that old?
Oh, yeah.
That's too bad.
So do you want to begin with aggregation or you want me to tell them?
Well, what does aggregation mean?
I was going to ask you.
It. Oh.
Do you want to explain what it means or you want me to?
Putting together, combining in some way. So just keep in mind that when... you have multiple IRA accounts, the IRS actually sees them and treats them as one big IRA. Now, that doesn't mean your traditionals and your Roths are aggregated together. Those are always kept separate. But if you have a traditional IRA or a Roth IRA, and you happen to have one opened at multiple places, you don't really have a bunch of separate ones. You have one big one that happens to be cut up and held at multiple custodians.
Exactly. So I reached out to him exactly along that line. And I said, I first told him that, yes, we've done a few. Unfortunately, they are no longer on the show. But can you add a little bit more clarification on what you mean? And he's kind of going down that road. He wrote back, "Hi, Jim. Nothing specific with regards to the aggregation rules, but more of a thorough thought overview." And he wrote, "I feel that most people, including most financial advisors, are fully aware of the aggregation rules when completing a Roth conversion. But I'm confused when you have a non-deductible and deductible IRA, then convert it shortly after. Are people ignoring aggregation rules? Should we be looking at all IRA assets or only the assets I'm converting?" So why don't you talk about that?
Well, he's kind of mixing in the prorating rules where you've got deductible and non-deductible contributions in your IRA, but still the rule holds that the IRAs are considered one big IRA.
Exactly.
You don't get to slice it up and consider little pieces of it standalone. It's always the entire thing. So this is what, when you're doing conversions, what people run into a lot, usually when they're using the backdoor Roth contribution technique, we always recommend you don't have any money in your traditional IRA already. That's because you're going to create a prorating rule when you make non-deductible contributions into your IRA. And even if you put the non-deductible ones in one account at one custodian and you have the deductible ones in the other, it's still considered one big IRA all mixed together.
And that's where people get burned.
For sure.
Because on this backdoor, it's called the backdoor Roth conversion, and I feel that is a poor name, a misnomer. Anyone can convert. Anybody. It's actually a backdoor Roth contribution, in my opinion. And not everyone can contribute to a Roth. So the thought is, folks, we talk about this all the time on the radio show, that you would put money into a, if you make too much money to put money in a Roth, anybody can put money in a non-deductible IRA. So the thought behind the process is, since anyone can do that, and you make too much money to put money into a Roth IRA, put money into a non-deductible IRA first, step one. Step two, convert said account to a Roth IRA, and it would be tax-free on the conversion. Why? Because you put money into a non-deductible IRA. That means you never deducted that money on your taxes. If you never deducted it on your taxes, that means it's after-tax money. And you're not taxed twice in this country, except in a few unique cases that we won't mention, I'll get into. But for the most part, you're not taxed twice in this country on your income and earnings. So the thought is you would put money into a non-deductible IRA, convert it tax-free, and since it was never taxed, since it was after-tax money to begin with, it moves from the non-deductible IRA to the Roth IRA tax-free, and boom! You got money into a Roth IRA. Now, we talked under the new tax law change, the one that we just panned a minute ago. A good thing in it is it specifically addressed this strategy and specifically endorsed it.
Right.
Said it was perfectly fine.
Some people were concerned that it wasn't allowed by the law, but they clarified that it was okay.
Yeah, it's perfectly fine. So now that we know it can be done and it's endorsed, here's the problem, Chris. Let's say you put $5,000 into your non-deductible IRA and you thought, okay, I'm not going to do anything with that IRA. I'm going to put it in. Let's say you opened it at Vanguard, and I'm just picking Vanguard out of the blue. And then a few days later, when it was still worth $5,000, you called up Vanguard and told them to move it to a Roth. And you think in your mind, because it was only that non-deductible money, I'm okay. But you also had $95,000, Chris, in another traditional IRA, but it was 100% tax deferred. Are you going to be able to do that?
Not cleanly. If you do that, you're going to end up not being able to move the $5,000 over without paying additional taxes, because you're going to have to move a prorated amount of pre- and post-tax money, making this more convoluted and kind of undermining the goal, which is to get money in there, your $5,000 or whatever the contribution might have been, 100% tax-free on the conversion portion of it.
Because in the eyes of the IRS, your two IRAs were aggregated as if they were one. So you aggregate all IRAs as if they were one, all Roth IRAs as if they were one, except 401ks, folks. Don't get aggregated into one big one. Each 401k is considered by the IRS to be a separate account. Very interesting on the aggregation rules, but that's what that listener was asking. Yeah.
So if you have any questions specific to aggregation rules, certainly reach out to us. We'll be more than happy to address those. That music means we're at the end of another Retirement and IRA show. We'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.